Hi, I'm Ethan Kim, and you're listening to Break the System from MyTechni. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Break the System, the show that breaks down systems through science. Today, it's our season finale. It's episode 40, the end of the year. It's been a really long year, and for those of you that have stuck with us for the past 39 or so episodes, thank you so much for your support. And we'll be back in January with a new season with some more interesting content and perhaps even some video as well. Today's episode is not really so much about me exploring a topic, but doing more of a retrospective sort of point of view. I invited Raf and Alex to come and talk about what the season for the Canvas series has been like, as well as reflecting on some of the more common themes we found between our two shows. It is a little bit of a long one, but we hope you enjoy. All right, so today, rather than it being me breaking down something that Raf and me interviewing someone is going to be like, we're actually going to join forces and join our shows together, really, to explore what we've done in the past year. It's been kind of long. It's November. It's been a long time coming. So rather than us interviewing, we're going to be talking about what worked for us, what didn't, what was valuable in our last year of conversations, what worked for us in terms of how we used our own systems, what did we take from them, what didn't we take, and at the end of the episode, we're going to talk about a little bit of what's coming down the pipeline in next year. So, you know, a refreshed season of Break the System, the Canvas series, and probably some new content as well. As a little bit of a sneak peek, we're going to be doing product. So what's the point of us interviewing and reading scientific papers? Well, we're trying to make a product that will ultimately aim to help you, be a little bit more productive. That's what I've been saying for the last year. Be curious, be productive, right? So we're just going to have fun with this episode. We're just going to have a casual talk. And so here they are, Raf and Alex. Introduce yourselves.
Yes, thank you for having me on Break the System, I suppose. Looking forward to this. It's been a very long year on the Canvas series side as well, and I think there's a lot of things that we've learned from our guests and, just complimenting some of the research you've done on Break the System. There's definitely some interesting stuff that I know I personally adopted into my personal systems, and, really looking forward to thinking about how we codify that into a product to help our target users.
Yeah, so past year, I've pretty much been just focusing on editing and creating content for the Canvas series, and also sort of bouncing ideas back and forth with Ethan, creating things and plans for content for next year, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, and we actually have a new member in our crew, Julian, who's actually doing some of the camera work out back. He doesn't have a mic, but we'll introduce you to him coming next year as soon as we can, so keep your eyes and ears tuned for that. But without further ado, let's get into it. So for Break the System, this is our 40th episode. For everyone that's been with us for all these 40 episodes and listening to me drone on about science, thanks for sticking by. And I promise there's going to be more of that, but hopefully a little bit more interactive rather than just me droning facts at you. It's been a lot of fun. But I want to say, like, one of the most interesting things that I've sort of came across while doing a lot of BTS stuff is how a lot of the themes of my episodes sort of end up tying together. So what I found was that, it kind of got repetitive here and there, right? There's a lot of time management, self-reflection, and habit building. But that's what I realized was actually, important in terms of being productive and being intent with your time. You don't even realize that you build all these associations with people, with habits, locations even, and objects, that it just ends up being this like mess that we're trying to untangle with our different systems. And how I view us, building a quote-unquote system is that it helps us navigate through all of those different associations and habits and separates them so you can see actually what's going on with your life. So let's say you go to work and you feel mind language just shitty. You don't really know why, but then you kind of reflect and, you know, look back at why it's happening that way. And maybe you have like a shitty manager, or it's just a toxic environment that you've built a relationship with unconsciously. And that's one of the things that kept coming up in my episode. It's like, it becomes unconscious. It's not something that you are aware of right away. You have to sort of stop, take a step back, and evaluate the situation as a whole. So like, why do I feel that way? What are the processes behind it? And most of the times during that self-reflective moment, you'll have little nuggets of wisdom, as I like to say, that pop out to you. And you'll be like, oh, I didn't even realize this before, but here we are looking at the situation, and this is exactly why I feel that way. You might not be able to pinpoint it at the moment, but it will come up here and there.
But that's interesting though, right? You know, when I think about, you know, on the Canvas series side as well with all the guests, you know, when you think about the notion of a system, right? This idea of, you know, whether it's processes or tools or your environment, whatever it is, you know, one of the benefits or, you know, purposes of having a system is to have, you know, greater automations such that, you know, that thing is more streamlined and it becomes more automatic and you don't have to consciously think everything through, right? So, you know, on your example of going to work, right? You know, most of us, you know, take the same path, you know, commute or whatever it is, and to work, and it simplifies that experience for us so that we don't, you know, have to think about every single day how we're going to go to work. But I do think that there are moments, and this is what a lot of the guests, where, you know, despite they have systems, there's definitely moments where they reflect on the system itself and they think about how do they modify given changes in their life. You know, how do they adapt to say that, you know, they, you know, have a new client that's outside of the GTA, and that's something that they have to factor in terms of the travel and commute time, and how does that impact their time management, their energy, whatever it is. And that constant automation but reflection on that system was something that was a common denominator for our guests as well.
What about you, Alex? What are some things that you just, you know, as a listener and also editor, I'm sure you've had a lot of time to just listen to Raf talk, but what are some of the things that you found that were just, you know, it came up a lot during a lot of these guests?
So a common theme is probably just on staying consistent with your system, right? And it might seem at surface level a little bit counterintuitive, during the busy seasons and like busy periods of time, when, let's say for example, you got upcoming project, pitch, work assignment, school, midterms or exams, and you're trying to just prioritize like those most urgent and most important tasks. And in your mind, you're thinking, wow, okay, if I can cut back a little bit of sleep, cut back on cooking and just eat out, and cut back a little bit on my, you know, workout, skip, you know, my exercise, I have another 4 hours to study or do my project. And now, like, instead of 4 hours, I have 8 hours. Mm-hmm. But that is sort of like a fallacy, because you don't take into consideration how effective you are in those longer blocks of time that you have sort of set out for yourself. Is the full 8 hours accurate and reflective of true progress? I think in my own experiences, they're usually not. Like, the longer it is, the drop off hits harder.
Yeah.
And you sort of tail off in terms of productivity. I think this has been repeated by multiple episodes on our show, like with Daniel Breeze talking about, like, you know, cutting back or on like sleep or diet. Raph's mentioned it multiple like times, and you realize that you should be measuring based on effective productivity time, right? Within that 8 hour block, is my effective time, my effective rate 50%, and so then my true work is actually 4 hours, right? So you're looking at, how am I approaching it? Is it an effective approach? And what is the actual true results, right, of the whole process? And that has sort of been enlightening to me. So if I think about my own process recently, I stick to my workouts and my like cooking and my sleep more and more strictly when I know I'm getting more and more stressed out, because I know I can't just sprint and then crash right afterwards, because I probably have something right afterwards that I can't afford to miss as well.
Yeah. And I think this kind of gets fueled on by the idea of like productivity guilt, right? Let's say, you know, for a typical student, midterm season is currently on, and you know, you have midterm after midterm after midterm. And I remember in like second year, I literally had a midterm like every week for 2 months. Like I had no break. There'd be one after the other. I have assignment, quizzes, etc. So I would find myself cutting back on sleep and cutting back on my eating, just, you know, ordering food as expensive as it was for a college student. You know, my budget takes a hit, my sleep takes a hit, and my workouts take a hit. And like all of that combined, yeah, I'd get like 4 more hours to study. But like Alex was saying, am I doing anything during those 4 hours? Probably not. If anything, I'm probably, you know, putting Netflix on like one monitor and trying to study and saying, you know, I have 4 more hours to do work. So really, I can afford to like goof off. And that's what I've noticed too recently, where I've just been hard blocking my time of like, let's say I'm going to give myself 3 hours to work on one task. I just block myself for 3 hours. And that gives me that sense of urgency of like, hey, I need to finish this in 3 hours. I can't goof off. I can't be doing other shit. It just needs to be right there, right at the right time. And like, it forces me to be in this kind of like work mode almost. And that's kind of like the association that I've been building for myself of like time, like the allotted time for me is the amount of time that I see that is going to be effective for me. So I'm not going to plan anything for like 5 hours. I'm just going to give myself like a 3 to 2-3 hour block of like work. And this is what I get to do.
Yes, and that's key, right? I think, you know, Pollyanna also mentioned the chemistry at one point that, you know, when you don't time box your tasks, especially tasks that are, you know, I'd say more open in nature, you know, there's that the notion of like the Parkinson's law where, you know, work fills time allocated. So if you don't, you know, time box your work, like you're just going to end up working on it all day. And then there's the other, you know, piece of it that I think where, you know, a carving a specific time is also very helpful is that that sense of urgency also, at least from my experience, helps fight procrastination, right? And, you know, I think it was really only in this season where I, because of the research and the conversations we had with guests, where I went deeper into understanding what is procrastination and more specifically, why do you procrastinate? And this notion that it's really a some avoidance of some emotions that you don't want. And I've never really thought of it that way, but then, you know, when you think about it, like it makes a lot of sense, right? And I thought that was really interesting. And it's helped me better understand and then from there, better prevent procrastination.
Yeah, so to go back on that. So like procrastination by almost like definition is you're avoiding something, right? And that is sort of, it's built into us as people. So like what I mean is like, we don't like to face the negativity. Like we all don't like it when someone critiques our work. You know, we spent like however many hours on it, and it's always that one stickler comment of like, oh, it could have been like that much better. And you're like, really? Like I spent this much time, you could appreciate the amount of time, right? Instead of being that one stickler. And so as people, we don't want to anticipate that negativity coming towards us. And so to deflect it, we just keep deflecting it with time. So like, for procrastination, for example, one of the things that drives it is like perfectionism. And I'm sure for people listening to this podcast, you probably know what perfectionism is. You know, you're driven to have your work as perfect as possible, as like the utmost peak of what you can do. But like, let's be real here. If we could all do that, we'd be living like a perfect life, everyone. But we can't, right? The reality is we're not perfect. And so a part of it is like, knowing that we can't be as perfect as we can and learning to accept that is one part, because if we keep trying to be perfect, what I've found in like research is that drives people to not accept the idea of like, you know, my work can't be perfect. And so they'll keep working on it, going back to the idea of like, you're going to work as much as you've time boxed it. So people are just going to delay it as much as they can because they don't want to face the reality that their work isn't perfect. And that is a shitty feeling.
So Alex, let me ask you, man, because you know, you create a lot of our content as well as some of the stuff you do at work as well. How do you fight like perfectionism, right? Especially with something that's, you know, creative is a little more subjective by nature. Like how do you find that balance between, you know, producing quality deliverables that people will enjoy, but at the same time, you know, not, you know, dwelling on it forever?
So I guess at work, for a big part of it is like the like my company right now is, I guess it's like more of a scale up rather than a startup, but the startup mentality of like lean and agile is still there. And the whole point is like, I'm not going to work on a task to the point where the return on investment drops off really significantly, right? Like I'll do my best effort within a time slot, but there's always a lot of work still in the backlog. There's always work to be done, and you can allocate as much time to, that you want, but eventually it's not going to be worth it anymore. And sometimes you just got to zoom out of your immediate task and look at the macro perspective. What is like, if I'm investing, let's say 5-6 hours on this like small little task for a client who is, you know, like a pretty small client, and the grand scheme of things, it's not going to pay off, right? But if we're talking about like a top 10 client and like it's 4 hours, I'm going to like commit really hard and make sure that that task is done very well, because it's just pure return on investment. And that's honestly just how we go about it. Where can we see the most returns and focus on those things? And anything else, we just sort of scale it down from there.
Okay, so how does that return on investment then, how does that feedback into kind of, I guess, how you evaluate yourself after that hour, or like how much of that work you've done?
Well, in terms of like output, right, it's going to be the same in terms of hourly, right? But rather, I would just invest more time in things that I would know that has more returns immediately to the company or to myself or to us when we're creating content, right? If there's any kind of specific project that we're working on that we know is like a high priority, and we know that, for example, cleaning like our website up or ramping up like our analytics dashboard is going to have a long-term payoff, and we're able to create content that better suits our users' listening behavior, that's something that is more important than maybe creating like 4 or 5 images for our social media page, right? You know, like that's the kind of thing that you need to sort of cross compare. It's not going to be always like, you know, oranges and oranges comparison. It's going to be apples and oranges sometimes, but you're going to have to do your best effort.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to build on that. So, you know, we've talked about like time boxing yourself and doing a lot of work. Obviously, when you do a lot of work, it leads to stress and it leads to burnout. So that's something that, you know, we've all talked about as a team, but also as with individual guests and on my podcast as well. So, you know, how do you manage your stress? How do you manage that time so that you don't end up burnt out? Because I would do that all the time. Like in undergrad, I would literally burn myself out like every other week because I just had too much shit to do. But how do you individually know that time point is coming? And like, what do you do to sort of just block yourself from that moment?
Two things, right? I think one, there's, you know, there's the prevention element that we talked about earlier, right? So I think having proper systems for self-care, so whether it's sleep, diet, exercise, or a combination of it, I think self-care systems is part of productivity systems. It's not, it's not a brother or sister. It is one, right? You can't be productive without the proper self-care mechanisms in place. And that's something I've learned this year. Throughout my whole career, I've always, been very obsessed with productivity and pushed really hard. But as you know, like every 8 to 12 weeks, there's a period where I just absolutely crash. I think having the right prevention mechanisms in place either one delays it, or two, when you are burnt out, it's not as bad. Like the impact is softened, so to speak. In terms of what indicators that would suggest that, I think it's just when, at least for me, when certain non-negotiable kind of practices start to drop off. So what, take meditation, for example. Either I'm not meditating anymore, or in that time slot, I'm just dozing off, or I'm just completely like scatterbrained or whatever it is. Those are some of the signs and symptoms that would point to me that like, hey, look, I'm getting a little exhausted. And especially as we're in November now, we're kind of approaching year end. It's been a long ass year. I think we're all kind of, at least for me, I'm teetering on the edge of burnout and not. And it's just a matter of making sure that, you know, to Alex's point earlier, I do not compromise on self-care pieces. And it's just to kind of just keep it going. And I'm taking some time off, right? And that's something I'm doing in a couple weeks. So that's what works for me.
for me, I think it's really around expectations and making clear that everybody around you knows what to expect from you and not spreading yourself thin. I still remember when I was in like first year and second year in like university, and I wanted to do everything, right? I wanted to do intramural sports. I wanted to, you know, like multiple sports and multiple sports teams, and also multiple student groups across like different interests. And I thought, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be like Hermione from like Hogwarts, right? I'm gonna throw back the time, and like everything's gonna be great. It's gonna be, it's all gonna work out. Calendar says I have enough time to do it, even though it looks like one solid block, right? Like end of day. But it doesn't work out, right? And through making sure that everybody knows what to expect from you, and if you really live on the principle of like under promise, over deliver, you'll be a lot happier because you don't raise people's expectations to something that is like far out of reach. And then you have to sort of pick up the pieces and really make it happen. And that's when you're like sprinting and then crashing right afterwards. For work, it's really just about like, if my manager sort of has like these lists of priorities, I'll just choose all the things that I know for sure from like past experiences that I can have done. And if there's any kind of level of uncertainty, I'll make it clear to them that I just won't be, I'm not sure if I will be able to complete it. I don't know the complexities of these tasks because it's something that I previously haven't worked on, but I'll keep you updated as we go. So I don't feel obligated to go sort of like crazy on it and make sure that I meet a deadline that previously, because of my lack of experience with facing the task, is outside of my own expertise.
So question for you though, Alex, is that strategy what you always employ or just when you're burning out, right? For instance, like I do, I absolutely agree. I think managing expectations is important, and understanding what you can and cannot do based on previous experience is important. But I would also say that in my career, I think not all, but a lot of my successes have come from saying yes to things I didn't think was possible, that I didn't think I can do. And that sheer sense of, I guess, pressure or urgency has allowed me to really push the boundaries. And that's not only promoted a lot of growth in myself, but also has allowed me to achieve some really meaningful outcomes. So question to you, like, is that what you always employ, or is that just kind of your technique when you know you're getting more tired?
No, I think it's always something that I always employ. Like, it's really a sort of like a guiding principle when it comes to like handling work. And like, it's not like I'm saying don't take tasks that you previously have no experience doing, right? Like, I've taken gigs where I sort of understand the task and what it takes, but I don't know. Like, for example, I used to do some video editing as well, and like I would take like event videography gigs, and like my team and I sometimes like we were a little bit like out of our comfort zone. Like, the stuff that they were asking was a little bit outside of what we're used to, and I had to learn on the fly. But I think that was made clear where it was, I'm going to try these things. I know these things. You know what I've done, like my portfolio before. I can try my best to do your effort, and I'll try to get it. But just know that what you should expect as a baseline is my previous work. And anything else that if I push the boundaries and I really get something new, then that's like all cherry on top, right? I know for a lot of revenue and like sales driven like positions, that might be a different take on it. But I think personally, in my experience working like gigs as well, it's just way better to do that, because sure, you might be able to close a deal, but what happens when you can't deliver? And that completely ruins your reputation. And in terms of your long-term sustainability, you look completely sketchy from there. Nobody will trust you afterwards. And I'm more of a long-term sustainable income kind of person rather than like, oh wow, I just closed a great deal, grab my money and go kind of guy.
So I kind of do a little bit of both. So like, there's obviously portions where I am aiming for like a much more long-term sustainable goal. Like, what the one thing that I learned from LifeSci is that you can't win from sprints. It's a really long ass marathon. And if anything, I'm probably still in it right now because I'm probably doing my master's in January. But another thing that I learned is that there are points in time where sprints are necessary. So like, a little bit of behind the scenes for Break the System. So like, before it used to be, I'd do like one episode a week, which wasn't horrible. But then once summer started and I was graduated, I needed to pump out, you know, two episodes per week. And that has been a grueling marathon of a run. And it's made me realize that I burnt out and I didn't even realize, because I'd be writing, you know, I'd be scripting the episodes that you listen to. And at some point, I would just get writer's block consistently. Like, I'd be questioning, like, you know, what do I even want to do with this piece? Like, I've read these papers, but what do I even want to present? Like, what's relevant? Do you even care? Like, the listeners, do you guys even care about what I say? Has made me realize that that is the portion that I need to take away in my life. It doesn't need to be a sprint every time. It just needs to be this more sustained marathon at a higher pace. And then learning that, you know, burnout for me in terms of content was facing that writer's block, facing the question of why is this even important? And then once those questions start to hit, I'm like, okay, I need to take a step back and really look at it from like an arm's distance away. Like, you know, what are you, I need to take the sort of perspective of the listeners. Like, what do you guys want, right? It's not about my own personal, you know, agenda of pushing all of these scientific theories on you. It's like, no, like, what do you guys listen to and why do you care? And I think that's been a really important perspective to take in the last few weeks of just taking an arm's length and being like, what do you want?
So whether it's, you know, writer's block or, you know, podcaster's block or whatever it is, I think anyone who creates something faces that kind of creation burnout, so to speak. So if you were to summarize in one line for people listening that faces that, what can they do about it?
Take a break. Like, honestly, just, I know for, you know, probably content creators, you need to produce stuff on a much more regular basis. But when you're not creating content, just take your mind off it. Just take an arm's length, stay away from it, come back to it when you're ready. Because if you don't, trust me, you're going to be facing the same block over and over and over, and you're going to hate it. Like, it gets to a point where you're like, you used to do it for fun, right? Like, you know, creating content is great. Whether it's video pieces, audio pieces, images, photography, videography, it's great. But once that becomes your profession and you're like, oh, this is like my 9-to-5, then once you start hating it, you really can't go back to liking it, is what I found. So before that happens, take a break, take an arm's length. And with that, I'm going to go and make a wide pivot to how we adopted these systems into our own personal lives. I know we've been talking about this for a while and how we've integrated, you know, self-care, taking an arm's length, etc. But, you know, what would you do as a listener of, you know, BTS or the Canvas series, of what would be your perspective on these things, right? You know, you've heard all of us talk about how to be productive, how can you manage your time, your energy, how can you eat better, diet better, etc. But, you know, what's your takeaway on all of these things? So I guess the question that I'm pointing towards is, what is your biggest takeaway in terms of our content as a whole?
If I was a listener, I think, you know, and I mean, even not as a listener, but as the interviewer on the Canvas series, I mean, one thing I've learned that's been consistent across both shows and all the topics that we talk about is that, you know, that finding what works for you, tracking that, so some sense of audit or self-awareness or writing it down and just kind of figuring out what works for you has been the biggest takeaway, right? Like, the reality is like, you know, while these themes are, you know, quite universal, I think everyone's, you know, they start with a baseline. They kind of start with like, okay, so so-and-so does this, let me kind of start there. But then from there, everyone tweaks it their own way, right? So I think, you know, like, you know, Becky talked about keeping a journal with her and, you know, journaling throughout the day, what's worked for her and what doesn't work for her. And I think being open to adjusting your system is important, right? And I think that for me has been the biggest thing, you know, like, as I think about, you know, like when I started to think about theming my days, for example, so, you know, Daniel talked about it, you know, Becky talked about it and whatnot. So for me in my life, like, it's not possible to like have one theme for a day. Like, I can't do sales for one day or product for one day. Just, there's just too many things going on. But then, you know, when I think about, okay, well, you know, maybe I can just theme, the work I do for my tech need each day. So, you know, on Monday it was product, and Tuesday it was, you know, marketing and content creation, and Wednesday it was strategy, whatever it is. Just, you know, parsing it out by the one priority versus the whole day. But that's something that took me almost a year to kind of figure out what is the right pattern around that, right? So I think for me, it's really just like, whatever it is that you do, there's all the things you've learned in this season, on this year for both shows. It's just tracking it and writing it and figuring out what works for you is the best thing, I would say.
What about you,
Alex? I think the biggest takeaway for me was the planning out your week in a dynamic way while minimizing context switching. So specifically, like when I talk about context switching, it's the matter of, if you're working side gigs, you have multiple things going on, or if at work you support multiple functions, you're gonna have to do a lot, like a diversified array of tasks. But if you're switching in between specific buckets of tasks constantly, you're always gonna have a latency or a ramp up period where you're trying to get your mind back into the zone of like, oh, I'm thinking about product. I need like think about this specific troubleshooting error in our platform. Got to figure out what's going on here. And these are the things that are within subtasks underneath that. But then suddenly somebody brings up like a, you know, like a sales pitch thing. And then like now you're like broken out of the zone. You're now trying to get caught up on like what's going on with this fire. I'm trying to put out this fire. And I will agree, sometimes it seems like outside of your control, but there are times where at the start of your week, you can plan out your week and have it as like a guiding line, like guidelines throughout the rest of your week. Things will change and shit will happen, right? You know, stuff always comes up, but at least having some kind of baseline to rely on, and also being able to delegate things that are subtasks that are unrelated to the immediate priorities outside of your context, can really help sort of ease that. And you sort of stay within the zone of like working on a specific task. So like you're high performing longer and not doing all these like minor ramp up periods here and there. And that's been very, very helpful, both like for my 9-to-5 and also for like handling side gigs.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with both of you on here. And also for me, it's been it's been the story of self-reflection. Like, you know, I just talked about, you know, why am I doing this podcast anyways? Like, I've needed to take myself away and just really reflect on the different aspects of my day and my week. I mean, like, you know, why am I doing this? How am I being intent with my time? And just managing that expectation and managing my time has really helped me become not only more productive, but more effective with whatever time that I have done so. And so with that, I'm going to make another pivot, probably our last, into product. Because let's be real here, a lot of what we've done so far for the Canvas series and Break the System has been to sort of gather the requirements for a product. You know, what are the problems that we do have for our 9-to-5? What makes that difficult? What makes time management difficult? Why is it so hard to understand the return on investment on your time and your energy, right? So with all of those pain points that we've talked about, we're sort of helping developing this product of time management, not energy management per se, but basically something to help you better plan your time and being more intent with it. So I'm going to let Raf and Alex take a bit of a hit on, or not a hit, I'm going to let you talk about it a little bit more here.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, when we take a step back and, to Alex's point, just zoom out a bit and kind of ask, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? You know, when you think about the Canvas here, the intent of that was to gather requirements for the individual person given their context. And everyone we interviewed this year were people who had a lot of different things on the go, right? So to Alex's point, very highly likely situation where they have a context switch throughout, you know, whether it's a 9-to-5, a side hustle, some kind of health regimen, whatever it is. And then once we layer in Break the System theories on that, now we kind of have a piece of theory and practical application, right? And then, so a couple months ago when we regrouped and went through everything we've learned, you know, not just this season, but over the last, 3-year journey of my technique, you know, some key problems start to surface, right? So one around scheduling priorities. I think often, you know, when, especially in a office and corporate environment, our calendars are typically a reflection of our meetings, right? So, you know, times where we are required to attend to do something. What we've learned is that, you know, one of the common things a lot of these high performers do is that not only do they have meetings and stuff in there, but they also schedule their priorities. So they take a more proactive approach on, you know, whether it's in the morning, this is what I'm doing in the mornings, or here's my evening routine, or, you know, to Alex's point, in this 3-hour block, this is what I'm going to focus on. So scheduling priorities and managing capacity around that's very important. That helps, you know, prevent burnout. That helps us be a little more focused, manage our attention and focus and whatnot. So I think, you know, scheduling priorities and managing capacity has been two challenges that people want to do, but it's not obvious on how to do it, how to maintain it, and how to keep it as part of a routine or a system.
So as a knee-jerk reaction, I'm going to ask you, Alex, what would be the top thing that you want for a product out of something like this?
I think for a product, it would be something on the lines of being able to automate the tedious tasks and repeated tasks and using user behavior as a feedback loop, right? Good example of that would be best practices on a lot of productivity apps are learned through experience of using it, but they're often not suggested during like the onboarding period. For example, if you're using Asana and any kind of like product management tool like that, it's super powerful, very useful, but they don't really provide lots of like walkthrough through how people use it. I learn pretty much every quarter from another team in my company, how they use it and how I can incorporate that into like my own team's workflow. And we suggest it in like the team chat and we're like, why have we not been told about this? Or why is this not learned? Because there's tools where platforms that have so many different features and so many different ways of using it. But in the context of your own team, you probably only use like 1/10 of like its actual true functionality, even though it has extra value adds. And Slack, I think, does a decent job of it, where it suggests things that for like booking using Slackbot, and it's almost like a conversation with like an assistant who tells you like, why don't you try this thing? Why don't you try this thing? And I think sharing best practices on an app, something like that, would be really, really helpful.
What about you, Rap? What would be your top ask for an app that will help you manage your time and, you know, being more intent with your time?
Honestly, man, it's just gotta be easy to use, right? You know, a while ago we all tried different productivity tools to see like, you know, like what other tools are doing. And you know, for me, the onboarding experience is everything, right? Because I think we all already have some existing system, and it doesn't have to be digital in nature, or it could be pen and paper, it could be a mix of a bunch of different things. But if you have to do, you know, double entry or take everything you have in Asana or Trello and pump into this new system, that's a turnoff already, right? Like, it's just got to be easy. And I think just by definition, the people we are targeting are people that are very busy. They have a lot of things on the go. And the last thing you want to do is invest hours on hours trying to make use of this new tool, right? Like when I think about like buying behaviors, unless something is like 10 times better, sometimes it's just not worth switching, you know, like even if a system or a tool or an app or product, whatever it is a B or a C plus, whatever, unless it's going to just completely knock it out of the park, it's just not worth the change from my perspective. And that's something that we need to factor in from a design perspective. It's just got to be like 10x returns, but very easy to onboard.
Yeah, I would agree. And also back to kind of your point, Rav, of people not being willing to sort of switch. It's the concept of familiarity, right? People don't like being like suddenly introduced to something new. They like the old familiar, you know, user interface and all the habits they've gotten used to. And yeah, so as sort of this product goes on and forth, we want your feedback, you know, the listeners, not Alex and Raph. Obviously, we'll have their feedback too, but we want your feedback in terms of, you know, what kind of product would you want from us? You know, we've been talking about basically for the last year, 2-3 years, we've been talking a lot of smack, but how do we back that up, right? And hopefully as this product gets developed and we can release some sort of model or, you know, even a working prototype, we will hopefully be able to address problems like scheduling priorities, managing your capacity, making it easy on board, making, you know, having that interaction with someone on your team, or even maybe like an assistant where it suggests different functions based on your behavior, that we can tackle things like procrastination, decision-making issues. You know, that's obviously a long reach and we've got a long ways to go, but that's sort of the direction that we're headed in, and we want you guys to be really invested. You know, as much as we like to talk about all of our strategies and systems, we're really invested in you becoming a part of our team and helping us develop that product.
So with that, I encourage everyone, if you want to reach out to us on social media at mytechne.io, and mytechne is spelled mytechne, as well as on our website, right? I think we have like on our technology page, you can jump in, sign up for a beta, you know, get in contact with us, and, you know, provide any suggestions on where the product's headed. You know, it's still very early stage. We're looking to get like a working prototype in the next, 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really looking to get everyone involved. You know, this is really built for us and for you as everyday people with a lot of things on the go.
You know, we always like to say we eat our own food. So we're not going to give you a product that we don't think is out there, you know, top of the quality. So we look forward to having you with our journey. And any closing remarks from you two?
No, I'm good. I think it's been a fantastic year. We did a lot this year, so I mean, good job for all of us as well, right?
Alex?
What you said.
All right, with that, that's going to be it. We'll see you in January. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Break the System. I've been your host, Ethan. We'll be back with more episodes of Break the System every Thursday. If you're interested in our other podcast series, make sure to check out the Canvas series, which airs every month. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play, and any of your favorite podcasting apps. If you found any of the tips helpful, or just simply enjoyed the episode, you can leave us a 5-star review and recommend our podcast to friends or colleagues that might find it useful as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.